Now, Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
You know, I'm just looking over some of the stark numbers here as we continue to weather COVID-19. I sent out a tweet at 6:58 p.m. Pacific time 2 days ago. So that's April the 25th. At that point, I noted that New York State has a population of about 20 million people, give or take. New York State, at that point, had 16,599 confirmed deaths, suspected at least, to be due to COVID-19. Ontario has a population of 14 million people. So 20 million for New York State, 14 million for Ontario. Ontario, not as large, but more than half of the way there in terms of the size. Canada's largest province, so it's our closest comparator. Ontario's deaths for COVID-19 at that point were only 811 people. Now, I don't want to say only, because each and every one of those people is the whole world to somebody, a loved one who has lost them. So I don't want to minimize that. But I pointed out that given the comparable size, you would think that there would be a smaller difference between the 16,500 deaths and the 811 deaths between New York State and Ontario. Well, since I tweeted that 2 days ago, ladies and gentlemen, we have had an additional 6,000 confirmed deaths due to COVID-19 in New York State. Yes, you heard that correctly. An additional 6,000 deaths in New York. Their total death count currently stands at 22,612, up from 16,000 when I sent out that tweet. Ontario, meanwhile, has risen from 811 deaths to 892. No, there was not a 6,000-person jump. There was a jump of, 79? Or actually, no, it would be 81. 811 to 892. Canada's policies are making a difference. We will never know who we saved. We will never know who is here now but would have been an empty seat around Christmas dinner if, in the other reality, we didn't do what we are doing in terms of aggressive social distancing. But I want to impress upon everyone the importance of the preservation of human life, and the sacrifices that we are making economically and socially are having real tangible benefits in perhaps thousands and thousands and thousands of lives being saved. You know, on the weekend when I was running these numbers, British Columbia has 5 million people. And at that point, we had 98 confirmed deaths. Again, everyone a tragedy. But New York State's four times the size of BC in terms of population. At that point, they had 169 times more deaths. So a factor of four. With a factor of 169. And it's gotten a lot worse since then, because that's without those extra 6,000 deaths that New York State has logged since the day before yesterday. Keep our friends and neighbors, the Americans, in your thoughts. They'll need support going through this, because it's not over for them, despite New York State being largely shut down right now. I want to talk about some of the impacts that we are feeling in the COVID-19 pandemic on family attachments. We know that COVID-19 is affecting our mental health. It can't be helped. People are isolated. They're not seeing their friends. They're afraid because there's an existential threat that they might be facing right outside their doorstep in terms of the potential of being infected by a stranger with COVID-19 who doesn't even know that they have it. What about familial bonds, family attachments? I want to bring into the conversation now a guest and the CEO, in fact, of the Vanier Institute for the Family, Nora Spinks. Welcome to the program. How are you?
Good afternoon, Adam. I'm just fine, thank you.
I find the data coming out of places like hard-hit New York State to be, I find an adjective difficult to articulate at this point, because on one hand, we knew it was going to be bad. But to say it out loud that, yeah, since 2 days ago when I was comparing Ontario deaths to New York State deaths, Ontario's had another 80 and New York had another 6,000 despite being similarly sized. What goes through your mind when you hear things like that?
Well, I think that it does show that the actions that we've taken in this country and the speed at which we took them and the compliance rate. So we have over 90% compliance rate in this country of social distancing and all the other practices that we've been promoting to contain the spread. But it also speaks volumes to our social infrastructure and our publicly funded healthcare system. A lot of people in the U.S. who couldn't afford healthcare stayed in their communities instead of seeking assistance early on.
Yes.
So there's also factors of density.
Yeah.
Although the population of New York State and Ontario are similar, just the sheer density of the population, there's no way you can maintain, 6 feet or 2 meters of distance in such a congested environment. So it does show that what we are doing is making a huge difference here. And it's not just what we've been doing in the last couple of weeks or the last month, but what we've done just sort of to structure our communities and the way in which we've designed our healthcare system.
Indeed. Well said. Familial attachments, staying strong through COVID-19. I'm pleased to see that. Talk about what we're seeing in terms of the structure of families amidst this economic maelstrom.
Yeah, families we know are the most adaptable institution in our society. And we've seen this in the last month to 6 weeks, that families, by and large, have come together, that their bonds to begin with were relatively strong. And it's not to say that there aren't extremes, that there are families, and we certainly are seeing an increase in the number of families that are experiencing violence or living with the threat of violence, no question about that. But what we do know about when any system, families being one of those, is experiencing disruption, trauma,
yes,
massive change outside of their control, two things happen. The strengths and the weaknesses in those systems gets magnified, amplified, and intensified. And for most families, that means they've come together, they've bonded deeper. In fact, we've been doing a weekly poll week over week, and families, particularly young men, so between the ages of 18 and 34 and 35 to 54, are indicating and that they are having more meaningful conversations with their partners. And that strengthens those connections, that builds that scaffolding within that family unit that allows them to withstand a longer duration in isolation and be able to manage more effectively within the constraints that we've all find ourselves in today. So families are coming together. They're having more conversations using the technology. So we're seeing families reach out to extended family members, whether that's the regularly scheduled, families at 5, which is something our family does. We do a family check-in call every day at 5 o'clock.
That's nice.
And wherever you are in the country, you dial in, and if you're in, you're in, and everybody talks about what they're having for dinner and how they're making out for the day. Quick pulse check. Before pandemic, people would do that on special occasions, and our family was no different. Birthdays, anniversaries, we would make those connections. But now it's every day. And so those connections are coming together stronger. We're hearing about families doing Zoom calls with cousins and extended family members. And, it was just around the holiday season, but what we've come to realize with the data is that people are doing it even though it's no longer a holiday or a special religious day. But they're scheduling these calls and participating using the technology in a way that we could never have anticipated or even planned for in any sort of strategic way. It's just one of the ways that families are adapting and modifying their behaviors. We're also hearing from children, and we've got a study in the field right now. Actually, there's a couple of them going on right now. And children are reporting that they're really enjoying time with parents. They're not rushing from activity to activity. They're not being passed from one adult to another. They're having time where they can have these conversations. And that's strengthening our families, which is ultimately strengthening our communities and our neighborhoods.
Our guest, Nora Spinks from the Vanier Institute for the Family, examining familial bonds in the midst of the COVID-19 crisis. Now, I can't help but wonder, Nora Spinks, how much this may or may not have to do with the idea that because of social distancing and the norms being advised regarding that, that one can actually only really spend time with one's own household right now, at least mostly, you know, like the odd additional social tie is not going to destroy anything. You just have to stay away from crowded bars, restaurants, stadiums, those sorts of things. How much might that be playing a role in terms of both bringing people together, but also we're hearing some stories of folks being pushed apart? I've seen some divorce lawyers saying that their caseload's going up.
Yeah, when we look at the divorce data, whenever there's this kind of experience, it can push people to extremes. So again, if your relationship was weak to begin with, and you were heading down the path to divorce anyway, this may have accelerated it. Those things that were moving you in that direction were amplified, intensified, and magnified. So you may divorce sooner than you would have anyway. We're also expecting that because of the courts being closed down in large part, that and accessing lawyers only over the phone, it becomes harder to do that. So there's like this pent-up demand when the crisis will be over. Mm-hmm. So we're anticipating that. But we're not anticipating a huge, boom in divorces. If you're divorcing post-pandemic, you are probably going down that path anyway. So it's going to take us a while to determine whether or not or how big, if any, that blip is. Because some may not have, if there was no pandemic, they might have divorced, but it would have been 3 years from now or 5 years from now. But this is just blown up in out of proportion the things that were, the tensions that were there in the first place.
Interesting.
Where we are also seeing that is around fertility. So people, you hear people, oh, there's going to be a COVID baby boom.
Yes.
Well, we're really not anticipating that. And we're not anticipating that because unlike a blackout in the middle of winter where you've got one night where you've got nothing else to do, so, hey, let's do it, and children result, this is you're together all the time. You can have sex tonight or tomorrow night or the next night or all three. And so it's a different kind of investment in the relationship. Uh-huh. And a different type of intimacy. So it's not seize the opportunity, it's let's spend more quality time together as a couple. And that may be a part of it, but you don't have to rush it. And people are thinking about their future. We may be still doing some form of social distancing months from now. Is that how you want to give birth? And so we're anticipating that people are actually taking more precautions now than ever before. So although there's, sort of social media jokes about it, we're really not anticipating that going forward. The forecasts just don't bear that out.
Interesting. Our guest is Nora Spinks from the Vanier Institute for the Family. New survey data they are collecting, painting a picture of how Canadian families are coping with the stresses and strains of COVID-19, in many cases coming out with stronger familial bonds than they had going in. Thank you for your time. Any final thoughts?
Well, not to downplay the challenges that families are facing, you've got a couple of toddlers who are demanding your attention, or in fact, what we're finding is that families that only have one child that needs to be entertained and played with, looking for companionship, can be really difficult for families, and we can't underestimate that. But the good news is, by and large, most families in Canada are doing okay and will come through this and continue to adapt and adjust to whatever the world throws at them. So we'll continue to watch what's going on. We'll continue to measure it, and we'll continue this conversation as the weeks go by and we learn more every week.
Nora Spinks, thank you for your time. Take care.
Always a pleasure. Have a great day.
You too. Bye now. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. We'll do headlines, then open lines for the balance of the program. 250-386-1161 *1070. I've got some clear space on my board. If you want to grab a line, you want to get something off your chest, now's the time. Talk to you in a sec.